T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Guidance is internal. Ignition sequence starts. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
Permission to board, please.
Permission to come aboard.
Permission to board.
Permission to board.
Do I have some permission to board that sweet mothership?
This is the Permission Granted Podcast. Here's DA.
Welcome inside the DA Show's PGP, Permission Granted Podcast, everybody. The show about the show within the show. You can always download this on the normal DA Show iTunes or Apple Podcast feed or radio.com, the normal podcast feeds. It's there. It's also on its own podcast feed, so you can just search Permission Granted Podcast and check it out. So this week, we begin with Mraz on side A, and we begin with Happy Gilmore. We did Mothership of the Movies again. This is our fourth movie. Just an overall impression. I think this was the second most enjoyable to break down behind Rookie of the Year. I think Rookie of the Year was the most enjoyable because it had the most strategy in it that we could kill the manager for in yes. Rookie of the Year, but it was also the funniest. It gave me the most laughs, laugh out loud moments because it was trying to be funny as a comedy. So it made it, to me, second most enjoyable. How about you?
I think Happy Gilmore. Now, look, I'm not looking for, you know, awards won. To me, Happy Gilmore is the best movie of the four, just in terms of overall movie experience. But I would agree with you as far as breakdown. Happy Gilmore goes in at number two, behind Rookie of the Year, mainly because of strategy and anger. And just as a quick spin look ahead, that's kind of why I've pushed the envelope for draft day, because although we don't get any actual games played, the idea that we're discussing all these general managers and executives, draft day, I think, will provide a lot of strategy, and the backdrop is the Cleveland Browns. That gives us a chance to really crush it.
So you really are hoping that watching Kevin Costner play the GM of the Browns before the NFL draft is going to give us a lot of fodder to just destroy him.
Yes, I do, because I remember destroying him when the movie came out before we were doing Mothership at the Movies, and it was very rare that I did that with a movie. It only became recently that now I watch movies and crush them with no sports. And if I was doing that before the actual sports, how much worse could it be this go-around?
What are some little bonus items that we didn't get to on the air that you wanted to get to about Happy Gilmore?
Okay, so you mentioned in our chat, it's Lee Trevino is the golfer that keeps appearing, and he's appalled by Happy's cursing when he's first on the tour, but
yeah.
I don't understand, other than if we take the comedy aspect out, was Lee Trevino hired as a PGA spy to spy on Happy Gilmore? And this isn't brought up enough. How is it that he happens to be playing at the same mini golf course? He ends up, after mini golf, showing up to Happy's rinky-dink apartment complex and is sitting there right as Chubbs falls to his death. Is any cop questioning Lee Trevino as to what exactly he's doing? There's something off with Lee Trevino in this movie.
Lee Trevino is on the course, I think at the Waterbury Open, when he goes crazy, when Happy goes crazy. Maybe at his first tour event.
Yeah, his first actual tour, right.
Starts cursing. Trevino shakes his head. No, he doesn't like it. I think Trevino is also at the mini golf course, right?
Yes, he is.
Shakes
yes.
his head in disappointment. Also is outside the window of Adam Sandler when Chubbs Peterson falls to his death. Also shakes his head in disgust. So you're right. Why is it just a coincidence? I think the movie's suggesting that Lee Trevino's just coincidentally in all of these spots,
right,
seeing these kind of dark moments for Happy Gilmore.
Right. But I have to question if he's a spy. And point number two that I wish maybe there was a good Sports Illustrated reporter on this case at the time in 1996, but Happy Gilmore becomes a big advocate for the homeless. He needs a caddy, is unaware in the PGA
right.
Tour that a caddy is not provided for him. So he goes outside and he grabs the homeless person who had just been dragged away from police for doing the squeegees on the cars. Well, the homeless person has no idea what's going on. At one point, he's wearing one shoe. He's washing his underwear in the ball washer. There's a lot of things wrong with the homeless here. But what I gather is it's great of Happy to give him a job, give him something to do. And I think that's supposed to be a moment where you smile. But Happy is so consumed with collecting every last penny to get his grandmother's home back that by the end, the homeless man is wearing a suit and he's welcomed back to Happy's home,
right.
His grandma's home. But you know, how much is Happy tipping him? Because we did that story on the golfer who stiffed his caddy. That ended up being a 12 DAs a couple years ago. And I have to imagine Happy, who already doesn't understand proper golf etiquette to begin with, I think that this caddy is being extremely under-tipped, and I would love to get a report on that.
Because the caddy has to be bathing in ponds.
Right.
He has had no new clothes the entire time that
right.
they're on the tour.
Until
the
shoe?
Until the final scene when he's actually dressed up when they move into grandma's house. But you're right. He has no shoe. He's bathing in the pond. He has no new clothes. And he's the official caddy of a PGA Tour golfer for what amounts to 3 months. That's what they said. He had 90 days to win this money to get grandma's house back.
Right. He's now traveling out of wherever he was originally. I guess in Portland he was originally homeless, so he's traveled the country. But I want to know what money he's making, because I feel like Happy might have been unfairly treating this homeless man. We don't even get his name. I have a problem with that. Now, the other two quick hitters I want to run by you.
His name is officially Otto if you go to the IMDb
page. Oh, is it? Okay. I don't think they refer to him as Otto at all. Okay, Grandma all of a sudden in the Tour Championship DA has words of encouragement. Now, words of encouragement are great, and it's awesome that she is inspiring to Happy. She tells him the house never really mattered, and Happy's admitting having fun and all of this. But the whole bit here is Happy's shoulder and his drive game has been taken apart because he's been hit by the car. His shoulder is demolished. Now, Grandma might be great, and these words of encouragement, and maybe that motivates him to gut it out, so to speak. But the moment she speaks to him and kind of, you know, calms him down, suddenly he's hammering balls 400 yards again and driving nobody's business. How could Grandma's words suddenly magically heal his shoulder from the real problem at hand?
His shoulder is mangled.
It
just got hit by a car, and he got nailed going up in the air, and he falls on his shoulder. It's got to be a dislocation. He can't even swing it. It basically pops out of the socket as soon as he drives his first one. And then, boom, he's fine as soon as Grandma says, just have fun.
Right. Suddenly, now he could torque it all the way. I found that to be very egregious. And my last and final point is a big show backdrop and something you've referenced me with Zubaz and stuff you've killed Bill O'Brien for. Does it make you unhappy watching that movie, seeing, ironically, how well Happy could play by wearing sweatpants? A lot is made. Happy will not wear the traditional golf outfit or uniform, and he becomes a success story while competing in sweatpants. Did that bother you at all?
It didn't bother me necessarily, because that was his whole get up the entire time, very dressed down, very informal. I was struck by how cumbersome I would feel baggy sleeves would be while playing golf, especially driving. He had never-ending baggy sleeves, either the Bruins jersey or the button-downs the entire time. And I'm thinking, I don't think that would really help me. I think that would really get in the way of my driving every single, you know, golf outing.
Yes, and I would agree with that. The baggage is something. I also want to know, what was the NHL affiliate of the team he got cut from? Because if it was the Bruins, how can you stay being a true Bruins fan wearing their jersey on the course at all times?
He also has the Bruins hat. He's a big Bruins fan, very obviously. But yeah, you would hope that he didn't get cut by a Bruins affiliate, although it seems to suggest it's in Wedderbury, Connecticut. So you would think that it's a New England team.
Right, you would assume. And also, Happy claims to be this big Bruins fan. I hate to get too bogushy on this, though. But when he goes and he finds the golf clubs, he's such in a rush to, quote, watch the hockey game, and that's when he bets about the driving.
Yeah.
Who references watching the hockey game? Would you say I have to watch the Bruins game? I found that a little weird.
Unless it's not the Bruins game, unless it's just like...
But who says, you know, that? Like, no sports fan
maybe
says...
Maybe it's Nordiques Ducks.
Right, but I would never say, I need to watch the hockey game. Like, he went out of his way to keep saying, watch the hockey game. No fan talks like that.
So, I went to Rotten Tomatoes because we were talking on the air about how this was such... It was so emblematic of a time where Adam Sandler movies were really good. And again, maybe you have to be of a certain age. I realize that, like, when Adam Sandler rises to, you know, his greatest heights with Billy Madison, Happy Gilmore, I'm in high school, early college. So, like, this is going to be right in my wheelhouse. But I really felt like rewatching Happy Gilmore, it was legitimately funny.
It was. It holds up the test of time without a doubt. And it was funny because Happy Gilmore, I have no problem admitting this, is one of my top five favorite movies of all time, well before this. It resonated with me. The combination of sports and comedy, I've always leaned comedy when it comes to a lot of movies. It might be my favorite comedy of all time, although there's some good Will Ferrell stuff I enjoy as well. But my wife actually said to me, Danielle goes, well, why are you rewatching this? You've seen Happy, and I have. I had to have seen Happy Gilmore 100 times in my life. And I said, I understand that it holds the test of time. I'll watch it randomly on FX on a random Sunday afternoon. I can't get away from it. I said, but I'm watching it from a different perspective now. I need to really focus on the sports part of this because I'm sure there's stuff I missed. But to your point, watching it 100 times and then go back and rewatching it with the pure laser focus in which I had to watch it, you're right. The test of time is unbelievable, and it really bothers you what Adam Sandler has become.
So that's why I want to get into this Rotten Tomatoes list, because they rated, of course, Rotten Tomatoes is, I think it's mainly user ratings. I don't think these are critic ratings. I think these are user ratings. So these are the rankings based on their ratings of the greatest to worst Adam Sandler movies ever. Okay.
Okay.
Now, they have a couple of movies in here that have Adam Sandler in the movie, but it's not an Adam Sandler film. So these are,
okay.
I'm only going to rank the films, give you the film that Adam Sandler's the core, you know, centerpiece of.
Okay.
They say the best Adam Sandler movie ever was Uncut Gems.
Oh, come on.
And you said you hated it. I haven't seen it.
Okay, maybe hate's a little strong, but the way people talked about Uncut Gems, I thought I was walking into, like, one of the greatest movies of all time. It was not that at all. You know why people loved it? Because it really gave you that degenerate gambler feel that's so popular right now. But it's not. I mean, to call that the greatest Adam Sandler movie, yeah, maybe because it's the only movie he acted seriously in, but that doesn't define great.
They put Punch Drunk Love number two.
God,
I didn't like that movie.
No.
They put Funny People 3.
Oh, stop. Funny People suck so bad.
They then put Wedding Singer 4, which I loved.
Right.
Okay. Then they put Rain Over Me at number 5. Rain Over Me, I think that's a post 9/11 movie. It's really serious.
I never saw that movie. I never
It's really
heard
dark.
Of the movie.
Yeah, I think he loses his family in 9/11.
Oh.
Then Happy Gilmore.
Come on.
Okay, so I think Gilmore is a little bit too late in this list already. Then they put Spanglish. Awful.
Spanglish?
Awful.
All right. Well, right off the bat, we could tell what's going on here. They're not favoring comedies for Adam Sandler.
Right.
Which is the problem with a list like this. When you think Adam Sandler, you think comedies. Like, when you make a list about Adam Sandler, I don't think it's really debatable. This isn't a hot take. I don't think it is. You think Billy Madison and Happy Gilmore.
Absolutely.
And then you start the rest of the conversation. So if those are not your first two movies, then your list is completely swayed and you're only taking into account or trying to take more into account non-comedy roles.
Then they put 50 First Dates. That was him and Drew Barrymore in Hawaii.
It's fine.
I don't mind
the movie.
Then Murder Mystery with Jennifer Aniston. I didn't see that.
I didn't see that. I think that's one of those new Netflix movies.
I think you're right. Then Anger Management with Jack Nicholson.
You often forget that that's an Adam Sandler movie.
Yep, it's fine. Then Billy Madison. See, Billy Madison's way too low on this list.
I agree.
Then Big Daddy.
Okay, excellent.
Okay. Then You Don't Mess with the Zohan.
Ahead of the Waterboy?
Then they put Waterboy after that.
All right. I mean, I have no Mr. Deeds there.
That's what I'm saying. I don't like this list at all. Then they go Click. Garbage. Then The Longest Yard.
The Longest Yard's good. Gets trashed because it's a remake.
And then Sandy Wexler. I didn't see Sandy Wexler. Sandy, it's one of the Wexler. Netflix ones. It can't, I mean, now we're just into trash Adam Sandler films, right?
Right. Did we miss The Waterboy?
Yeah, I just mentioned The Waterboy just before that.
Okay.
Then,
all right.
So now we're going towards the worst. Mr. Deeds and Little Nicky back to back. I thought Deeds was good. I thought Little Nicky was bad. But in comparison, I feel like Little Nicky now wouldn't be as bad as some of his recent garbage.
Yes, I agree. Little Nicky, I think, is better 20 years later than it is in real time.
Then That's My Boy, which I liked. Him and Adam, him and Andy Samberg, I liked. Then Just Go With It.
That's with Jennifer Aniston, where he fakes that he's married to get with, I think, Kate Upton.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Now we're into the dregs. Pixels, which I've heard is just an absolute crap show. Then I've now pronounced you Chuck and Larry, which I hated.
Well, I think the moment you see Kevin James on the screen, you cringe because you picture me. So I think that is your bias against anything Kevin James related.
Chuck and Larry was garbage. Then Blended, I didn't see that.
That's with Drew Barrymore. They go to the safari or something.
Then Grown Ups 1.
Uh-huh.
Then The Do-Over.
Never heard of it.
This has David Spade in it?
Of course it does. You could have said this has David Spade in it about every single one of those movies. And then Rob Schneider.
Here is the bottom four movies, according to... And now, when we talk about rankings, like, we're in single digits. He has multiple movies that are less than 10% approval rating, which is virtually impossible. Okay, this is what they consider the worst of Adam Sandler. The Cobbler... This came out 5 years ago. He was
Netflix.
He was a shoemaker.
Oh, that sounds terrible.
Grown Ups 2, which has a 7% approval rating. 7%.
I think all seven of the people in my family are the only people that approved.
Then Jack and Jill, where
that
he plays
brutal.
where he plays the brother and the sister, right?
Oh, that is brutal.
Which got a 3% rating. And then something called The Ridiculous Six.
I never heard of that.
Which got a 0% rating that has him, Terry Crews, and Steve Buscemi as six bizarre and diverse strangers in the Wild West.
That sounds terrible. By the way, there's a movie missing there, I'm surprised.
What's that?
Nighttime Stories, or it was like a kid comedy where he goes to read his like nephew a bedtime story, and then they end up in the story.
Bedtime Stories. That was in the middle of that was like number 20 or so.
Boy, I've seen way too many Adam Sandler movies. But again, I think the list, you're right at the back end there. All those deserve to be at the back end. But that's a tough list for me to take seriously when it doesn't start with Billy Madison and Happy Gilmore. That means you've slanted it away from comedies, which is you shouldn't be doing a list on Adam Sandler if not for the comedies. And also, how could the last movie he make be the greatest movies ever done?
Right. How also has Adam Sandler made 44 films?
It's a lot of volume. It's a volume shooter.
My God.
That's kind of like, you know, when you look back at Terrell Owens' career and you're like, wait, he was on the Bills?
There was a Bengals year in there?
Right, exactly. I don't remember that. It was when I saw Keyshawn Johnson on the Panthers last week. I'm like, huh? When did that happen? The Cobbler?
The Cobbler. The Cobbler happened. Let me throw this last one out at you. Us being in the New York City area, I got an email today from the Bronx Zoo. And it says...
Wait. Before you read what it says, I will give you space to say that. Why are you on the mailing list for the Bronx Zoo?
Because for either a Christmas gift or a birthday gift, I got the Bourbon Bell a couple of like tickets or season passes or VIP things to the Bronx Zoo. She's a huge animal fan, so...
Okay.
So I'm on this emailing list, and it... First of all, it says, for a limited time, take 25% off a future Bronx Zoo visit. It says, hi, Damon. As you know, the Bronx Zoo is currently closed to the public, but the animals continue to receive expert care, yada, yada, yada. Right now, we're giving 25% off tickets for a future visit. That's good for an entire year from purchase. You know, I'm looking forward to getting back to normal, and I'm looking forward to, you know, doing things like this. But is now the right time to be saying, hey, we've got a discount because of coronavirus? Like, A, do you feel comfortable buying a ticket right now to anything? B, is it kind of weird that they're like, sale with coronavirus?
All right, so I'm with you. I don't mind advertisers or companies looking to find ways to kind of pre-get ahead of when the country and local areas reopen. So I get it, but at the same time, the Bronx Zoo is just a weird one to me. And it's like they also had to throw in the line about how well kept the animals have been to make you feel better about buying the ticket. That's one. If you're the Bronx Zoo, you're kind of like McDonald's, right? Like, we know you're there. We know you will be there. I don't need that email right now.
Well, have you found the rash of coronavirus commercials depressing?
Yes. Oh, yes.
I mean, because I get it. Like, you can't be too jokey right now, but every time I'm watching TV, it's another commercial about, like, sad food workers and them insisting, don't worry, your food is safe. Like, Papa John's, don't worry. Right out of the oven, we put a piece of tape on top so we can't touch it. We can't cough on it.
Taco Bell, hand delivery and all of this stuff.
No contact delivery. No contact payment. It's like, I kind of want a relief from everybody reminding me I can't eat anything.
And there's a couple parts of that, of all of this stuff that bothers me. Like, it's like, I know it's not 100% preventable. Like, you'd have to be crazy to think it is. And no matter if you're buying stores and supermarket buying stuff, like, nothing is contactless. Like, somebody still cooked that food at whatever store you are and put it in the bag. Like, just they've touched the food and then taped the bag and then handing it to you on a tray. The germs or whatever, the trail is still there. It's the same thing you go to a supermarket, whatever. Like, we can do all we want. Somebody still cut that meat. Somebody still wrapped it. Like,
Cut that meat.
Like, it is impossible to do that. But what I'm really is bothering me on those commercials is, you're not as big a TV guy as I am, but all of these networks that, you know, you're running your favorite shows, and we're starting to get to the end of these seasons, and a lot of the finales are this week and next week. But every time you're watching a show for the last month, stars of these shows would pop up in the commercials with PSAs kind of telling you, you know, stay home, stay inside, come on, we could do this together. And, you know, I saw it again last night, and I'm just thinking to myself, it's April 14th, man. Like, if we need you still telling us to stay home, we haven't been doing this right for like six weeks. You know, like, do I still need Paulie D when I'm watching the Jersey Shore to tell me to stay inside? Like, I think I got it. Like, who is the one watching it going, wow, I didn't think of that. You know, maybe I should be staying inside. What the heck have you been doing for 6 weeks?
Do you watch Bob Hart's Abishola?
So I was tempted to after having Billy Gardell on the show. And this was supposed to be on Monday night. And then I got to be honest, Monday night I had plans for it. I really did. 8:15, I conked out. It was the earliest I've conked out during quarantine. But I thought about it because we had Gardell on the show. I have not watched it.
So I have not watched it either. This is a CBS sitcom. We had Billy Gardell on the show on Monday to promote it. And Billy played Mike and Mike and Molly.
We have him on to promote it. Neither of us watch.
So my mom and dad apparently love Bob Hart's Abishola. They love this show. And so I don't really know anything about it. Billy was great. But my mom goes, you had Abishola's boyfriend on? I'm like, what?
What?
And I guess in the TV show, Billy Gardell plays Abishola, like Bob Hart's Abishola. It's Bob and Abishola. Abishola is his girlfriend's name.
Oh, I didn't know that. I just thought Bob Hart put together a sketch comedy.
Bob Hart, what do you think? What do you think Abishola was?
I don't know. I thought Abishola was just a name for like madness. Like, whose line is it anyway?
No, that's his girlfriend's name in it.
Oh, wow. So Billy Gard, wow. Okay. You know what? I might have to run back some on demand.
So my mom goes, so you had Abishola's boyfriend on. I'm like, well, that's a weird way to reference it. But yes, we had Abishola's boyfriend on. And then she's like, so how'd they tape the episodes? Like, with masks on? And I'm like, I don't know. Honestly, Mom, that's a great question. I wish I would have asked him that. I mean, must have been an episode that had been taped before the virus, right?
I think most, I could be wrong, I believe most tapings, most, for a lot of these shows and sitcoms end in late February, early March for the rest of the season.
So what interesting timing that they got an entire season in right under the deadline.
Yes, exactly. It was right around that line because somebody I knew works for another TV network that said the same thing, that all their shows in this out mostly works. You know, they'll tape the first half of the seasons, then come back around wintertime, tape the second halves, and usually by the end of February, beginning of March, you're all wrapped up because a lot of the shows end in April.
These are great questions that I wish I would have asked Billy Gardell.
Yes. Unbelievable. Now I'm going to have to watch the show.
All right, you got Bogues on side B here?
Yeah, first time I'm hosting side B in what feels like a year and a half. I'm ready to go.
Take it away, buddy.
All right, welcome into side B. This is Mraz once again hosting side B of the PGP, the executive producer of the DA show as well, joined in quarantine by the bogeyman himself, Andrew Bogish. Andrew, hello.
Well, hello, Sean. How are you?
It is fantastic. You are actually the only member of the DA show I've made eye contact with in what feels like 5 weeks. Although you didn't make eye contact with me, as I was in a big bunny suit when I last saw you Friday to surprise your children. So it was actually nice, even from afar, seeing a refreshing face. How are you doing right now and not seeing the rest of the crew as we do the show every day?
You know, I'm doing okay. It has been tough not to get my normal face-to-face time with Pete the Body. I mean, he and I have been working mornings since the network started back in 2012/13. So, I mean, that's the real big change for me.
Of course.
Is not that breath of fresh air every morning when you first encounter Bilotti.
Now, I will ask you this, because it would not be a PGP side B with you and I if we did not discuss Pete as well. And I want to get into Happy Gilmore in just a second. But as far as Pete goes, I will step up to the plate, and I will be an honest man, and I will give Pete credit, because we like to bust Pete's chops a lot, and there still will be chops to be busted. He has been the one of all of us, the core four, core five, if you will, with Kaplan.
Yep.
That is going into the studio every day for the most part. He's, you know, taking a couple of mental health days, which are more deserving. Do we, when the show gets back to normal, which is hopefully sooner rather than later, do we now have to back off criticisms of Pete after this?
There probably should be a tiny bit of leeway for Pete, but I will say this. I mean, he's the one, now it's not a thank you gift from us or even the company, but he's got live wrestling now. I mean, so
right.
Yeah, the negative for him is that he's got to go into the studio and I guess he's driving in every day and whatever. But, you know, you and I are sitting here missing real baseball, real football.
Oh.
We have no hockey playoffs. Our Rangers could have made a charge to get in and maybe thinking first run upset right now. We've got none of that. Pete, at least when he does get to go home, he can actually break down an actual live Monday Night Raw or get ready for the next, you know, Hell in the Cell or whatever it's called. You know, is there a Royal Rumble soon? So, I mean, he does have that going for him right now.
That is a good point. Pete right now, out of all of us, is actually benefiting the most as far as sports activity because he's getting his main thing, his main fixes, his wrestling. Now, real quickly to the story of the morning, which has become these movies on Wednesday specifically, and Happy Gilmore now became our fourth, which is just remarkable that we are now four movies in the holster. Shows how long this has been going on our end with the lack of sports being watched. The beauty, I think, that you have brought to the table, and I'm sure DA has discussed it with you as well, is you are very critical of movies where, you know, I might break down the sports real hardcore and you're good at, but you love pointing out, you know, problems you have with movies. And I think you actually have a unique talent with that. And I'm interested to pick your brain. What were some of your actual problems with the film Happy Gilmore?
Yeah, I mean, I can't not, like, think of reality. And in fact, somebody yelled at me on Twitter after the show on Wednesday because I hadn't seen Predator.
Yeah.
And
I have not either, by the way. I know what Predator is.
Sure.
But I've not seen it.
Exactly. So, I mean, like, the thing is, for me, like, I haven't always loved, like, action movies because I can't ignore, like, the disconnect with reality. Now, if you want to give me something that is complete and utter fiction from the beginning, like Game of Thrones, like, I'll believe in a dragon or, like, a witch because none
right.
of this is real. Right, like it's all make believe. So then I'm fine with that. But if you're trying to make, I always think of it's in one of the Mission Impossible movies where like Tom Cruise is on top of like a runaway subway car, and the car explodes or crashes, and instead of taking him down with it, it like shoots him forward to the next train car, which he lands on safely and continues along his merry way. Like that's just not possible. So, like, that bothers me because it's kind of reality, it's kind of true, and then there's nonsense. So that's where my overall head is. So when I watch these sports movies, I can't deal with ignoring what actually happens in sports. And DA brought up one of the things on the air. In real life golf, first of all, tournaments are 4 days. A lot of these are just one-day events in Happy Gilmore. But, like, every time Happy Gilmore swings and misses, that's a stroke. They don't count those against him in the movie. And that one sequence where he's, like, swinging and missing or whatever, or hitting the ball out of play, like, they're clearly not keeping score correctly because that's how you lose a tournament in one sequence, the way he plays. So there are a lot of little things like that that I just wish they paid a little more attention to, like, how things work in real life when it comes to sports.
Okay, so the biggest problem I had, and I don't know if you noticed this, I typed in the chat, they must have not taken the time to film this on multiple golf courses because they would keep saying where they were at for the next Open. It was the Cleveland Open. It was in Portland. And there would just be mountain ranges behind the golf course in places where you know mountains don't exist.
Yeah, it was one course, and even they must have shot. Obviously, it takes a while to shoot scenes, but if you watch really closely, too, there are times where the same scene is in rain and then not rain. So, like, they just didn't care about...
Pick up on that.
They must have had, like, seven... I mean, it was, what, only, like, the second or third movie he made, so
right.
The budget probably wasn't huge, so they were not going to travel to multiple sets, and they were just plowing through weather conditions, not caring about continuity, because they just needed to finish the movie and move on.
And also, travel ceased to matter in this. In other words,
yes.
Shooter McGavin somehow has the same dope, the you jackass guy, who must live wherever he lives, but somehow is readily available within 12 hours to be at the next course and know exactly where the Red Lobster is near this course. No matter what city it is, he shows up and he's ready to go.
Well, it also bothered me that Happy was driving across the country to these events in the world's worst car as well. Like, never had a breakdown, never had a flat, never was late.
Right, goes from Connecticut to Oregon on a week's notice in
right.
that car.
They were in Texas at one point. I mean, he was theoretically all over the place in the biggest jalopy ever, and that was never an issue.
And also, I hate to tear it apart because it's one of my favorite movies of all time. They make it so obvious that the next tournament, by the way, after that first one where ticket sales are through the roof, is they've already sold out in Dallas. Then when they cut to the next tournament, they blatantly tell you they're in Cleveland.
Yeah.
Why would you go above and beyond to just screw that up?
Yeah, I don't know.
The point is saying it's in Dallas. How do you show up the next tournament when it's Cleveland?
they don't pay attention. They don't. I think some of those are just honest mistakes, whether it's like in editing or script writing. But sometimes I just think they go, you know what? Most people aren't going to notice. And they just plow along and plow through because they assume most people are not us paying this close attention to details like that.
Now, the other part of Wednesday's show was your stunned to a news involved the alcohol consumption at work per state, if you will. And I thought about this a lot because obviously we are working mornings every day, and I brought up DA and I doing the Sundays, but it really makes no sense even from us working at home to be part of this drinking from home. But in reality, do you find yourself during quarantine drinking more than you normally would?
I don't know that I've had more drinks total, but I have had a drink on more days, if
yes.
that makes sense, because what I haven't done is like gone out to dinner, gone to somebody's backyard, gone to a party where you might have had like three or four or five drinks, but like I have more nightly like cocktails, or the days recently where it's been warm and we've been outside doing stuff, that's just like perfect beer weather. So if I was keeping track of ounces, I probably am not drinking the same amount that way, but there are more days on the calendar checked off with a drink than normal.
Okay, so I'm glad you said I am the same way. It's actually, the last two nights in a row, I have not had so much as one drink, but there was a good 2-3 week stretch there where I know I had a drink every single day, where if I'm home or if I'm in a regular work routine, it's basically 2 of the 3 weekend days I will pick to have alcohol. Only one will I really get them going, but I might have only gotten really, really, you know, sloppy at home one of the days in this quarantine, but I've drank almost all the days. In fact, Bogish, I don't know if this has become a trend in your neighborhood. This isn't, you know, you and I live in the suburbs of Long Island, so it's a little different if you live in a city where they're really trying to keep people inside in the streets, but you're allowed in the suburbs because there's more space, you're not on top of each other, to go for your walks, go for your runs. The new happy hour on Fridays that we've noticed for the last month now, and it's building more and more steam, is you go out and take a walk, whether it's with your dog, whether it's with your kids, whether it's with both, and you're just open container, lighting beers up in that 4, 5, 6 o'clock Eastern hour on Friday afternoons in our neighborhood. You're walking, and everybody's well apart, and people are just coolers under carriages or whatever and just drinking in the streets.
Yeah, see, it's funny. My neighborhood has been relatively tame. My wife and I were just on this yesterday. It's been pretty quiet, but we both, like, when we – I've been riding my bike a bunch recently. She's been running. We go to the next town, which is a little more fancy, a little more affluent. It's Garden City on Long Island, and it's hopping. Like, there are people out. Now, no one is necessarily, like, breaking any rules. They're not having parties and congregating.
Right.
There's just more people, 10 to 15 people apart, than you would normally see. So I'm kind of disappointed in my neighborhood that we have not picked up the slack just yet in terms of getting out there and having some fun. But it crossed my mind to have, like, a pseudo block party where no one was actually interacting, but all sitting like in your front stoop, kind of hanging out just to seem like something regular is happening.
That's definitely been going on in our neighborhood, definitely. But it's truly, I mean, people just, you know, doing cheerses to each other as you're walking, you're taking a walk through your neighborhood, and everybody's just getting pounded as they walk. Like, that's the new happy hour. And I kind of look forward to it now. Like, that is my Friday. Like, I can't wait. You know, I'm basically going to take a six-pack of Kona Big Wave and just, you know, walk for 3 miles while drinking.
I know.
And there's not a cop in sight, by the way, right now.
Right.
They have far more important stuff to care about open container because you're just in a neighborhood anyway. They know you're not driving or anything.
No. I mean, and it's happened around here. I mean, Halloween is a huge walking around, drinking adult day in my neighborhood.
Right.
I was shy. Like, I'm carrying a cart full of mixed drinks and beer last year. So we have it in our blood. No one seems to have really organized it, though. Yeah, maybe I need to get on that.
Yeah, that is the one thing I've looked forward to. But no drinking on the job yet. Who knows? This is quarantine.
I mean, I
continues.
Could have a mimosa if you wanted to twist my arm during the morning show.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. All right, Bogish. Well, thank you so much. It was good to catch up with you here on Side B, you and I breaking it down. Hopefully we have more Pete stories to come, maybe as the weeks continue. And and we'll keep going from there. You can follow Andrew Bogish on Twitter at
Andrew Bogish.
And you, with a C, which is weird. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at MirazCBS. Have a great week, everyone.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.